The Worm Ouroboros by E.R. Edison. Chapter 8. The First Expedition to Impland. Of the homecoming of the demons, and how Lord Jus was taught in a dream whither he must seek for tidings of his dear brother, and how they took counsel at Cruthering, and determined of their expedition to Impland. Midsummer night, ambrosial, starry-curdled, walked on the sea, as the ship that brought the demons home drew nigh to her journey's end. The cloaks of Lord Jus and Lord Brandoc Daha, who slept on the poop, were wet with dew. Smoothly they had passage through that charmed night, where winds were hushed asleep, and naught was heard save the waves talking beneath the bows of the ship, the lilting changeless song of the steersman, and the creak, dip, and swash of oars, keeping time to his singing. Vega burned like a sapphire near the zenith, and Arcturus, low in the northwest, beaconing over Demonland. In the remote southeast, Fomalhaut rose from the sea, a lonely splendor in the dim region of Capricorn and the fishes. So rode they, till day broke, and a light wind sprang up fresh and keen. Jus waked, and stood up to scan the grey glassy surface of the sea, spread to vast distances, where sky and water faded into one. Astern, great clouds bridged the gates of day, boiling upward into crags of wine-dark vapor and burning plumes of sunrise. In the stainless spaces of the sky above these, sailed the horned moon, frail and wan as a white foam flower blown from the waves. Westward, facing the thunder smoke of dawn, the fine far ridge of Cartadza was like cut crystal against the sky, the first island sentinel of many mountain demon land, his topmost cliffs dawn illumined with pale gold and amethyst, while yet the lesser heights lay obscure, lapped in the folds of night. And with the opening day, the mists swathing the mountain skirts were lifted up in billowy masses that grew and shrank and grew again, made restless by the wayward winds which morning waked in the hollow mountainside, and torn by them into wisps and streamers. Some were blown upward, steaming up the great gullies in the rocks below the peak, while now and then a puff of cloud swam free for a minute, floated a minute's space, as ready to sail skyward, then indolently stooped again to the mountain wall to veil it in an unsubstantial fleece of golden vapor. And now all the western seaboard of Demon Land lay clear to view, stretching 50 miles and more from Northhouse Skerries past the Drakeholms and the low downs of Kestewick and Byland, beyond which tower the mountains of the Scarf, past the jagged skyline of the Thornbacks and the far Neverdale peaks overhanging the wooded shores of Onwardlythe and lower Tivendardale, to the extreme southern headland, filmy pale in the distance, where the great range of Rimmon Armon plunges its last wild bastion in the sea. As a lover gazing upon his mistress, so gazed Lord Jus on Demon Land, rising from the sea. No word spake he till they came off Lookinghaven Ness, and could see where, beyond the beaked promontory, the sound opened between Cartadza and the mainland. Albeit the outer sea was calm, the air in the sound was thick with spray from the churning of the waters among the reefs and swallowing shoals. For the tide ran like a mill-race through that sound, and the roaring of it was plain to hear at 2 miles' distance where they sailed. Jus said, "Mindest thou my shepherding of the ghoul fleet into yonder jaws? I would not tell thee for shame when as the fit was on me. But "This is the first day since the sending came upon us that I have not wished in my heart that the races of Kartadza had gulped me down also, and given me one ending with the accursed ghouls." Lord Brandok Daha looked swiftly upon him and was silent. Now in a short while was the ship come into Looking Haven, and alongside of the Marble Quay. There amid his folk stood Spitfire, who greeted them, saying, "I made all ready to bring three of you home in triumph from your ship, but Vol counseled against it. Glad am I that I took his counsel, and put by those things I had prepared. They had cut me to the heart to see them now." Jess answered him, "Oh, my brother, this noise of hammers in Looking Haven, and these 10 keels laid on the slips, show me ye have been busied on things nearer our needs than bay leaves and the instruments of joy, since thou camest home." So they took horse, and while they rode, they related to Spitfire all that had befallen since their faring to Carcy. In such wise came they north past the harbour, and so over Havershaw Tongue to Beckfoot, where they took the upper path that climbs into Evendale close under the screes of Starksty Pike, and so came, a little before noon, to Gailing. The black rock of Gailing stands at the end of the spur that runs down from the south ridge of Little Drakeholm, dividing Brankdale from Evendale. On three sides the cliffs fall sheer from the castle walls to the deep woods of oak and birch and rowan tree, which carpet the flats of Moongarth Bottom, and feather the walls of the gill through which the Brankdale Beck plunges in waterfall after waterfall. Only on the northeast may aught save a winged thing come at the castle, across a smooth grass-grown saddle less than a stone's throw in width. Over that saddle runs the paven way leading from the Brankdale Road to the Lion Gate, and within the gate is that garden of the grass walk between the yews where Lessingham stood with the martlet 9 weeks before, when first he came to Demonland. When night fell and supper was done, Jus walked alone on the walls of the castle, watching the constellations burn in the moonless sky above the mighty shadows of the mountains, listening to the hooting of the owls in the woods below, and the faint distant tinkle of cowbells, and breathing the fragrance borne up from the garden on the night wind, that even in high summer tasted keen of the mountains and the sea. These sights and scents and voices of the holy night so held him in thrall that it wanted but an hour of midnight when he left the battlements, and called the sleepy housecarls to light him to his chamber in the south tower of Gailing. Wondrous fair was the great four-posted bed of the Lord Jus, builded of solid gold, and hung with curtains of dark blue tapestry, whereon were figured sleep flowers. The canopy above the bed was a mosaic of tiny stones, jet, serpentine, dark hyacinth, black marble, bloodstone, and lapis lazuli, so confounded in a maze of altering hue and luster that they might mock the palpitating sky of night. And therein was the likeness of the constellation of Orion, held by Jus for guardian of his fortunes, the stars whereof, like those beneath the golden canopy in the presence chamber, were jewels shining of their own light, yet dead wood glimmering in the dark. For Betelgeuse was a ruby shining, and a diamond for Rigel, and pale topazes for the other stars. The four posts of the bed were of the thickness of a man's arm in their upper parts, but at their lower parts great as his waist, and carven in the image of birds and beasts. At the foot of the bed, a lion for courage and an owl for wisdom, and at the head, an alaunt for faithfulness of heart and a kingfisher for happiness. On the cornice of the bed and on the panels above the pillow against the wall were carved Jus's deeds of daring do. And the latest carving was of the sea fight with the ghouls. To the right of the bed stood a table with old books of songs and books of the stars and of herbs and beasts and travelers' tales. And there was Jus wont to lay his sword beside him while he slept. All the walls were panelled with dark sweet-smelling wood, and armor and weapons hung thereon. Mighty chests and armories, hasped and bound with gold, stood against the wall, wherein he kept his rich apparel. Windows opened to the west and south, and on each window ledge stood a bowl of palest jade filled with white roses, and the air entering the bedchamber was laden with their scent. About cockcrow came a dream unto Lord Jus, standing by his head and touching his eyes, so that he seemed to wake and look about the chamber. And he seemed to behold an evil beast, all burning as a drake, busy in his chamber, with many heads, the most venomous that ever he the days of his life had seen, and about it its five fawns, like to itself, but smaller. It seemed to Jus that in place of his sword there lay a great spear of fair workmanship on the table by his bed, and it seemed to him in his dream that this spear had been his all his life, and was his greatest treasure, and that with it he might accomplish all things, and without it scarcely aught to his mind. He labored to reach out his hand to the spear, but some power withheld him, so that for all his striving he might not stir. But that beast took up the spear in its jaws, and went with it forth from the chamber. It seemed to Jus that the power that held him departed with the departing of the beast, so that he leapt up and snatched down weapons from the wall, and made an onslaught on the fawns of that fell beast, that were tearing down the woven hangings, and marring with their fiery breath the figure of the kingfisher at the head of his bed. All the chamber was full of the reek of burning, and he thought his friends were with him in that chamber, Vol and Viz and Zig and Spitfire and Brandok the Ha, fighting with the beasts, and the beasts prevailed against them. Then it seemed to him that the bedpost, carven in the likeness of an owl, spake to him in his dream in human speech, and the owl said, O fool, that shalt justly be put in great misery without end, except thou bring back this spear. Hast thou forgotten that this only is thy greatest treasure and most worthiest care? Therewith came back that grim and grisful beast into the chamber, and Jus assailed it, crying to the owl, Uncivil owl, where then must I find my spear that this beast hath hidden? And it seemed to him that the owl made answer, Inquire in Kostra Belorn. So tumultuous was Lord Jus's dream that he was flung at waking out of bed onto the deerskin carpets of the floor, and his right hand clutched the hilt of his great sword where it lay on the table by his bed, whereas in his dream he had beheld the spear. Mightily moved was he, and forthwith clothed himself, and faring through the dim corridors came to Spitfire's chamber, and sat on the bed and waked him. And Jus told him his dream, and said, I hold myself clean of all blame hereabout, for from that day forth this only hath been my care, how to find my dear brother and fetch him home, and only then to wreak myself on the witches. And what was this spear in my dream, if not Goldry? This vision of the night kindleth for us a beacon fire we needs must seek to. It bade me inquire in Kostra Belorn. Until that be done, never will I rest, nor so much as think on aught besides. Spitfire answered, and said, Thou be'est our older brother, and I shall follow and obey thee in all that thou wilt do, or shalt ordain hereof. Then fared Jus to the guest chamber, where Lord Brandok the Ha lay a-sleeping, and waked him, and told him all. Brandok Daha snuggled him under the bedclothes, and said, "Let me be, and let me sleep yet 2 hours. Then will I rise, and bathe, and array myself, and eat my morning meal, and thereafter will I take rede with thee, and tell thee somewhat for thine advantage. I have not slept in a goose-feather bed and sheets of lawn these many weeks. If thou plague me now, by God, I will incontinently take horse over the stile to Cruthering, and let thee and thine affairs go to the devil." So Jus laughed, and left him in peace. End of part 1 of chapter 8.